I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
We will work to offer a loving hand to new mothers.
Now each time Usha and I welcomed our own children into the world, we saw firsthand the indescribable beauty of new life.
The president, vice president, and other national leaders speak at the annual March for Life.
This is really righting a wrong that happened.
Analysis on the pardons of pro-life activists and the multiple executive orders President Trump has signed to protect the unborn.
Instead of looking to take someone's life, we should be working to give compassion.
A bill in Missouri aims to legalize assisted suicide, the work of the pro-life movement to combat its progress and alert Missourians.
In my second term, we will again stand proudly for families and for life. We will protect the historic gains we have made and stop the radical Democrat push for a federal right to unlimited abortion on demand up to the moment of birth and even after birth.
President Donald Trump's video message to marchers at the 52nd annual March for Life, just days after taking office. The president thanked pro-life advocates for their tireless work and devotion to the movement across five decades and pledged to support women and children to help families thrive. President Trump's remarks came moments before Vice President J.D. Vance addressed marchers in person.
We march to protect the unborn. We march to proclaim and live out the sacred truth that every single child is a miracle and a gift from God.
Vance praised marchers for braving the cold and also promised to make it easier for couples to welcome children and feel supported in doing so.
We need a culture that celebrates life at all stages, one that recognizes and truly believes that the benchmark of national success is not our GDP number or our stock market, but whether people feel that they can raise thriving and healthy families in our country.
Just hours after the March for Life rally, President Trump signed several pro-life executive orders, among them one reinstating the Mexico City policy. This policy bans taxpayer funds from going to non-governmental foreign organizations that provide and promote abortions. Trump also signed an executive order to further enforce a ban on federal funding for abortions in the U.S., known as the Hyde Amendment. The Trump administration alleges that the Biden administration embedded federal funding of elective abortions in a wide variety of government programs. The flurry of executive orders weren't the only cause for celebration for the pro-life movement. On Thursday, January 23rd, President Trump pardoned 23 Americans imprisoned for protesting abortion. Some of those people are seen here, including Joan Bell, Jonathan Darnell, and Lauren Handy, signing the pardons in the Oval Office. The president called it an honor.
Next, we have a set of pardons for peaceful pro-life protesters who were prosecuted by the Biden administration for exercising their First Amendment rights.
Do you know how many?
I believe it's 23, sir.
23 people were prosecuted. They should not have been prosecuted. Many of them are elderly people. They should not have been prosecuted. This is a great honor to sign this.
One of those pardoned, Joan Bell, attended the March for Life and spoke with EWTN News' Mark Irons.
How are you feeling right now, both of you?
Oh, it's incredibly exciting. Very grateful to President Trump for fulfilling his word and doing it so efficiently, which government usually is. He signed the orders in the afternoon, and by 1 a.m., I picked up Joan from the jail. It's very exciting and wonderful.
How are you feeling, Joan?
Oh, wonderful. Being here, being released on the day of the March for Life, only God could arrange that. Only God could arrange that. And so we came, and it's been a glorious day, seeing old, wonderful friends, people who have been fighting for the babies for years.
The 23 pro-life activists who were pardoned were originally convicted of violating the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, more widely known as the FACE Act. The FACE Act was designed to increase penalties for people who obstruct access to abortion clinics or pregnancy resource centers. Critics say the Biden administration weaponized the FACE Act against pro-life advocates while not applying the same legal standards to pro-abortion protesters who have attacked pregnancy resource centers. Texas Representative Chip Roy has introduced a bill to repeal the FACE Act permanently. Joining me now in our studio is Natalie Dodson, a policy analyst at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, to help us better understand what all these moves mean for the pro-life movement. Natalie, it's such a pleasure to have you here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for making the time. So can we please talk about the executive orders first? There were quite a few of them that were passed. Major ones we mentioned already are enforcing the Hyde Amendment and reinstating the Mexico Policy Institute. Could you tell us more about them?
Yes. So these are really important executive actions. The first is an executive order. It recommits the Trump administration to the Hyde Amendment, which prohibits the use of federal health funds that promote abortion, so in federal programs. This is a really important action. The Biden administration sought to undermine the Hyde Amendment and other federal laws that prohibit the use of federal funds for abortion. And in this executive order, actually, President Trump revoked two Biden administration executive orders that sought to really implant abortion in reproductive health care. And so this is the first step of hopefully many for the Trump administration to really take a pro-life stance. And then the second is a memorandum reinstating the Mexico City policy, which the Biden administration had revoked. And so this is from President Trump's first administration. He's reinstating it, and he's really preventing non-government organizations from promoting abortion or providing abortion overseas. So these are important first steps for the Trump administration to take.
Very important indeed. Now, nearly two dozen pro-lifers convicted for violating the FACE Act have been pardoned. The Trump administration claims that the FACE Act was weaponized against pro-life advocates. Can you give us your thoughts on this?
Yep, this is really important. These are pro-life individuals who truly believe that life begins at conception, that want to support and protect human dignity. The Biden administration's Department of Justice took this law and warped it to target pro-life individuals, Catholics, Christians, Franciscan friar, elderly, mothers. And so this is really righting a wrong that happened.
Thank you, Natalie. And the president also issued a statement of support for the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which was passed in the House. But in the Senate, Democrats blocked the measure from advancing towards a vote. Why is such a common sense bill being restricted?
Well, it's true. This is common sense. This is simply requiring a medical professional to give the same type of life-affirming care that any other born child would have. This is a born child at the same gestational age of any other child. This is a born child who had a failed abortion attempt. And so this is giving the same care that any other human person would get. It's so straightforward, and unfortunately, Democrats are so radical on abortion that they aren't even willing to see that this is a human person who's already born that deserves this care.
And Natalie, President Trump also had the United States join the Geneva Convention again. We've covered the Geneva Convention in the past, but quickly for our viewers, could you tell us what it is and why it's so important?
Yes, it's so important. This is a document that really seeks to strengthen the lives of families, the lives of the unborn, and protect women's health. There are many, many countries who are a part of it, many UN countries, and so this is reinstating President Trump's commitment to protecting life abroad and within the United States.
That's great. And President Trump shared a video address at the March for Life, and then J.D. Vance came and gave some remarks as well. What impression do you think this gives to the secular world?
Yeah, I think this is so important because Vice President J.D. Vance is the second vice president who is very outwardly pro-life. You know, this is important as a stepping stone for this administration to show that they are committed to the pro-life stance, to show that the American voters who voted them in, who are pro-life, that they are standing up for those pro-life actions, and that this is a principle for the American founding, for the American principles. This is protecting the human dignity of every human person.
Thank you so much, Natalie.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Several lawmakers in the House have introduced a bill to federally block the use of chemical abortions in the U.S. The chemical abortion pill mifepristone is used in more than 60% of all abortions in the United States. The deadly drug originally required an in-person doctor's visit, but the FDA removed that safeguard and even allowed the drug to be sent in the mail, leaving women to go through these abortions at home without supervision of a doctor. Congressman Andy Ogles of Tennessee, who reintroduced the bill, said in a statement that the FDA has failed to protect women and the decision to eliminate in-person dispensing requirements has led to an overwhelming increase in chemical abortion-related ER visits, health complications, and even deaths. This year, several assisted suicide bills are making their way through state legislatures. This week, we take a look at Missouri House Bill 453. The bill seeks to allow those with a terminal disease to request medication to self-administer pills to end their life. It does make provisions to refer patients with psychological disorders and depression to receive counseling before deadly pills can be administered. The bill also requires 15 days between the initial oral request to commit suicide by prescription pill and the date that the written request is signed by the patient. Another 48 hours must pass between the written request and the writing of the prescription. Susan Klein, executive director of the Missouri Right to Life, joins us now to talk further about this disturbing bill. Susan, thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you, Abigail. I'm happy to be with you today.
Yes. So, Susan, how much support are you seeing behind this assisted suicide bill?
We don't believe that this bill has a chance of moving forward. Obviously, it's an issue that is discussed nationwide, but in Missouri, we value life from conception to natural death. And we have a statute in place that that follows that train of thought. These are always difficult issues when you talk about end of life. But instead of looking to take someone's life, we should be working to give compassion to that patient as well as that family as that end of life is nearing.
And we know that the elderly and disabled are often targeted by these kinds of laws. What do people need to know to protect themselves?
I think it's very important that we have leaders in our state that will work to fight for the right to life. For all innocent human lives. I think if people will contact their legislators, you'll hear that compassion from the legislators that we have now in place. So I would recommend that that people call their legislators and let people know that we do not want assisted suicide, whether it is dealing with, someone helping that person to die intentionally, or if it is, prescribing drugs for that person to take themselves. We believe that we should be giving every chance for life and helping those families in their end-of-life decisions.
And how is Missouri Right to Life working to inform Missourians of the dangers of this kind of legislation?
Through our newsletters, through our speaking engagements, we talk about the value of life from conception to natural death. So Missouri Right to Life, if you go on our website, it's missourilife.org, you'll find information there. We're going to be producing some podcasts on, living wills and, healthcare directives for end of life to make sure that people are getting the care that they need. We want to give them all the helps that we can through Missouri Right to Life.
That sounds like a great idea, and how innovative, a podcast that gives people the information they need right where they are. Susan, is there anything else you'd like to add before we close?
No, I absolutely believe that, and Missouri Right to Life is a leader in this, that the value of life is, God determines the beginning and the end. And as we deal with the issues, obviously, we need to give people the pain medication or whatever they need to endure until, God determines that end of life for them. So we just encourage people to make sure that their legislators know that we want to preserve life from the beginning to the end.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you, Abigail.
When we come back, thousands pack the Eagle Bank Arena, not for a game, but for a special celebration of life. We bring you to Life Fest when we return. Welcome back to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. It's been nearly 1 week since the March for Life, but the words, music, and memories are still echoing throughout the pro-life movement. It has been a tradition that before the march kicks off, many take part in an event called Life Fest. This year's Life Fest was held in Fairfax, Virginia, at the Eagle Bank Arena. It was a wonderful way to begin the day with song, praise, and worship. In the early hours of Friday, more than 1,000 people filled the Eagle Bank Arena in Fairfax, Virginia, kneeling in prayer, preparing to march for life.
We will.
This is Life Fest, a dynamic two-day pro-life event hosted by Knights of Columbus, the Archdiocese of Arlington, and the Sisters of Life.
Life Fest is an opportunity for young people to gather, to celebrate life, to be convicted first that their life has meaning, that they are unique, unrepeatable, that God has a plan and purpose for their lives, and then to go forth from here to spread that out into the world.
Mothers and daughters, young and old, coming from far and wide, brought together in the light of the Lord.
I came to Life Fest to find my connection with God and to help support people who are struggling.
We came to enjoy the community and just go to Mass and really pray and just have a great time with these people because they're great people.
I'm at Life Fest today because I'm a pro-life OBGYN, and I know from the bottom of my heart that life begins at conception and every life is worth saving.
Since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022, many believe the push to end abortion was over. In reality, it was just the beginning of a new challenge to the pro-life movement.
Turning it over to the states is great in respect that you can have states that enact legislation to protect life, but then there's a lot of other places where you put it back into the hands of the people with a referendum, and we're losing ground there, so we have to continue to fight.
Women such as Connie testified that she thought abortion was the only answer to her unplanned pregnancy. But the killing of her own born child brought on a grief that was almost too much to bear, until she asked God to help her.
Life got out of control. I was lost. I started gambling, isolating myself in those places, isolating myself from me, from the world. I was a walking dead. Now, I feel joyful. I feel full of life, a life that I feel worth living.
The former chairman of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops Committee on Pro-Life Activities, Bishop Michael F. Burbidge, wants women who are facing an unplanned pregnancy to know they are not alone.
If a woman is in that situation and she's afraid, some of the basic questions are saying, do you need housing while you're going through pregnancy? We can provide that for you. Do you need counseling? We can provide that for you. Do you need some basic necessities for your children as when they come into the world? We'll provide all those things for you. We'll walk with you.
Archbishop William Laurie has a message for the participants.
Pro-life leadership is not something for the distant future for these young people. It's something that should start right now.
And before the crowds headed out to the march, Father Scott Traynor sends them with this thought.
As we gather together, the truth that the pro-life movement is young, it is vibrant, it is creative, it is beautiful and attractive. It is hopeful and generous and dedicated and kind. Thank you, my brothers and sisters, for being here today, for saying your yes to give this witness today.
And what a beautiful witness it is. The pro-life witness is not just visible at the national level, but at the state level as well. The March for Life held marches in 16 state capitals across the country in 2024. That is double the number of the year before. At this year's national march, Aaron Goetz, senior director of the state march program, praised the initiative.
Many of our incredible partners and affiliates are here on stage with me, so I'm going to ask them to wave. We have California. We got Ohio, we have Virginia and Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Oregon, Kansas, and Kentucky. Let's hear it for our state marches taking fight to the capitals and across our country.
Already this month, two state marches have stepped off. In Indianapolis, Indiana, pro-lifers held signs, made speeches, and made their voices heard at the State House on January 22nd. And in Topeka, Kansas, pro-life demonstrators gathered on the south steps of the Kansas State Capitol in support of the unborn. Before we leave you today, we want to share some of the highlights of the 2025 March for Life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.
I would like to welcome you to the 52nd March for Life, the largest annual human rights demonstration in the world.
I just want to say, Jeannie Mancini, she's one of my heroes, and we thank her for her leadership.
This is the first time in the history of the March for Life that we've had both the Senate Majority Leader and the Speaker of the House not only on this stage, but speaking to you today.
Look around you today at the tens of thousands of Americans who will march up to Capitol Hill with you today. And I want you to remember, you are not alone.
One of his first official acts, President Trump had just freed and pardoned nearly two dozen wrongfully imprisoned pro-life activists.
Well, let me tell you, since we were able to beat Amendment 4, Florida is not only the place where woke goes to die, it's the place where babies go to live.
All of you here, all of you, have the power to change minds. I march for life because Verity deserves to be celebrated.
It's to stand up for precious little babies who cannot stand up for themselves.
We march to proclaim and live out the sacred truth that every single child is a miracle and a gift from God.
Today is a powerful day because of each and every one of you.
You are the voice for those who have no voice.
And together we are rebuilding a culture of life, and it begins now.
I know your hearts are warm and your spirits are strong because your mission is just very, very pure.
I want more babies in the United States of America. I want more happy children, and I want beautiful young men and women who are eager to welcome them into the world and eager to raise them.
That life is the best gift.